Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Study halls, SATs, liberal arts, student loans, layoffs, bailouts, broken dreams. This is not our future.
Hi, Tim.
Hello, Guy.
It's one of life's great pleasures to see you. We have not been spending so much time together recently, and the thing that has united us, appropriately I would argue, is a celebration of friendship itself.
Yes. That seems cryptic in a way. No, I'm just trying to game out. It sounds like you're sort of headed to somewhere a little bit hidden, a little bit secret. I was trying to pass the clues.
You know what? It's been so long. I do feel kind of coy and shy towards you. Yeah. I'm very happy to see you. You look very handsome.
Thank you. So do you.
Oh, my God.
Let me say this, though. Can I give you a heads up? Yeah. Did you say I never say that?
You didn't need to say that.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Just some context for what you're about to hear. I just had dinner, and that dinner entailed me trying to cook chicken too quickly, and I didn't realize that I had undercooked the chicken. So we're all on a journey, finding out in real time if that chicken that I had has salmonella, which is something that is very bad and also very prevalent in New Zealand chickens.
Hmm. Well, colour me intrigued, Tim. I love that you didn't put the chicken on the heat for a little longer. I like that you stuck to your guns. You said, this is how I've cooked the chicken. This is how I'll eat the chicken.
It's
this
back in the oven now.
Doctor wife will eat her chicken. So help me God, I will not put it back on the pan. That is a man who sticks to his guns.
It wasn't even in the oven. I really thought I'd done a satisfactory job of cooking this chicken. And I tell you what, Guy, you know me. I know you don't eat chicken, but you probably know this. I don't fuck with chicken. I'm very careful about chicken.
Yeah, you are. You take your chicken serious.
I take my chicken really fucking seriously. I don't eat a lot of red meat anymore, like barely any at all. But when I do, red meat, man, you can go loose with that. But you don't want to mess with chicken. Not what we're here to talk about. It's been an incredible day in so many ways. But the main way is that for some reason, the two of us have watched We Are Your Friends twice in a fucking row.
I honestly can't fucking believe that we had to do this. Like, the gamut of emotions I ran through when you told, like, because I was sort of reading it. I knew that we're going to make a recording together. And I saw We Are Your Friends. And I sort of thought, it's a bit of a long day at work, but I can knock out another We Are Your Friends. And then when I read the fine print and saw times two, I was so affronted. I genuinely
really
feel
angry.
This is unreasonable, but I felt really like attacked, and like I did feel like people were trying to kick me in the guts, like while I'm down on the floor. I feel like in terms of double features revisiting intellectual property that we've combed through pretty well so far, I felt like I'd probably done my penance. And I know that the reason that we've done this is unrelated to the reason I had to watch Sex and the City 2 twice, but I just couldn't fucking believe it.
You should say it out loud why we did it twice as well, why someone gave it to us.
Because, first of all, welcome everyone to our
the Substack era. This is the age of Substack now for TwiAwat. It's a brand new epoch. Am I saying that right? Epoch.
Well, I like the word. I'm not confident enough to use it, but I trust your instincts. So welcome along, everyone. And this is the our debut exclusive podcast on the Substack, and this was chosen by all of the champions who have been with us since our Patreon days. This was the last poll that went through for the Deciders Club on Patreon, and because we'd been distracted, being parents or living through a pandemic or being comedians or whatever it might be, you turkeys thought a really nice way of serving us up some rewenge or punishment for our laziness was your classic worst idea double feature.
And I'm so into it.
All I can say to those of you who initiated, executed, and planned this is from the very, very bottom of my heart, immense gratitude for subscribing to the podcast, and just the heartiest fuck you for what you've done.
This was an enormous pain in the ass, both logistically and just sort of emotionally, going back to the source material, which we had long ago kissed goodbye. And to do two helpings in one day was, there's no other word for it. It was just devastatingly fucked.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and I know we do it to ourselves, but it's, you feel like you're on top of your life, you know. And it might be for a minute.
Maybe that's the difference, though, Guy. The power dynamic has changed a little bit, and someone else giving us "We Are Your Friends" two helpings.
Yes, it's true. But it was one of those things where I was like, I'm in the midst of doing the comedy festival here in Melbourne, having a great time. And I've been trying to section off my days and, you know, relative to doing a comedy festival, live a healthy lifestyle. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I've got all this runway coming up. I thought, I'll do a podcast with Tim. And it's too much food you've served us. I can't eat two meals.
Guy opened up the floodgates here. He said, mate, I've got, because Guy's been bloody flat tack. He's like, I've got a little bit of time on Tuesday. What are we doing? What do we need to do? What's the latest Deciders Club thing? I was like, oh, you're not gonna like this.
And you, Tim, I mean, you were side saddling it with Remy the whole day.
Yeah,
you put your boy through a classic film twice, you could say.
Well, yeah, he slept through half of the second one, and honestly, I'll make him watch that half again because that's unfair. He's peaked out of his homework. But it was crazy. What a crazy amount of time. We're back with the boys. Okay, let's get into it, guys.
Let's talk about it because I had a fairly different experience from what I remembered of watching the movie, and I charted like what was almost an interesting emotional journey. And I thought of you. I knew you were watching with Remy, and I thought of you because I thought this movie is it's close to being something, and it's like an honest and open love letter towards the folly of youth and the pleasures and pitfalls of a certain time and a certain place. And I feel as though when we actually last gave this movie a proper going over, we were both in remarkably different life situations. Like the very idea of you having a baby watch it with you was not unthinkable, but unlikely. And so I just wondered about whether or not you felt any, not necessarily resonance, but any, like, there was any pause for reflection, or the movie took you to places that it hadn't before or you didn't see coming.
Well, there was some stuff I noticed that I hadn't before. I guess I'm not answering your question directly, but I just wanted to bring this up before I forgot it later. Because from memory, in our 52 plus watches of We Are Your Friends, I never dug into the fact that these guys are getting paid only, like, I think it was $6 a head, maybe $7, to bring people into the club. Like, they brought in...
652 heads.
Yeah. That's so many people. Like, as a person who's been putting on, you know, comedy shows, producing live events for a number of years, Jesus Christ, that's so many people to get into somewhere. And I think they're getting stiffed. No wonder they went to work for Gold Star Realty Solutions.
Yeah, they're absolutely getting the short end of the stick there. And it's, I mean, I just think they don't display a great awareness or intelligence. They got ripped off. When they get given their payment for that job, they are frustrated, and that is a huge turning point for them, and why they go and work for
Paige.
Dick full of diamonds, mouth full of concrete. One of the greats who, by the way, back to back turned in a couple of outstanding performances. Honestly, when I was watching it, it's like First time I was watching the movie again, remembering it. The second time, every time he was on screen, he elevated it. He advertised what it could have been. And to be honest, and I don't want to get into, you know, being a negative Nancy or critical too early, Wes Bentley, he has his moments, but it's a very patchy performance. Some of his line reads are absolutely
like do you spin here regularly? Again, I've forgotten about some of these lines that are just the most.
He can only take half the responsibility. That was a placeholder line written in the script, and they were going to fix it before the day, and they didn't. And like, you know, it's a bot line. It's not how people talk.
Because everyone, I mean, look, to bring you into the fold of our experience. So this is the bit where Zuccoli is having a cigarette. He's having a spliff, actually.
It's so funny because it's like it shows both the highs and the lows of the movie, this very scene.
He's in an alleyway. And actually, I thought when this was playing out today, I was like, you know what? It's not a terrible looking film. Like it was shot pretty nicely. It's kind of pretty. And so we've got Zace Fron. He's out there smoking his spliff. And James Reed from The Feelers rocks out of the club.
As portrayed by Wes Bentley.
They strike up a conversation. And just like, do you spin here regularly? They say the word spin as a verb to denote DJing multiple times in this movie. I'm not. And never have been, like, deep into the EDM scene. But I've fucking never even brushed up against that as a sort of term of art in music.
Yeah,
spinning.
You spin here regularly. It's representative of, also, like, regularly is...
You would never say it out loud. So, here's the thing about script writing, right? Like screenwriting, you got to say this stuff out loud at some point. You can't just write it down and hope it's going to work. You got to say it out loud.
Like the word regularly is something that should be avoided in real life. And if you are manufacturing a conversation for a movie to try and represent how people talk, you have so much opportunity to like handpick perfect words. A DJ who is spiraling, essentially the character of James Reed from The Feelers, he's a boozer, he's a bit washed out.
James Reed from New Zealand himself
as a quasi-intellectual or someone who knows what's happening, but it's not the way people talk. But it does also, this is what I'm saying about the high and the low of the movie encapsulated in one scene, is it does have the constantly funny, laugh-out-loud moment of Zace Fron having a spliff. He turns to James, who's something of an idol to him as a young DJ, and he says, "You smoking?" He says, "Yes, I do." Takes one draw, realizes it's tobacco in it, and fucking hiffs it like he's throwing out the first pitch at a Yankees game. Like the funniest way to treat any drug that's offered to you from another person.
Yeah. And then, I thought where you were going with this is...
And then I've always known this is your favorite. I like the throw.
I love this so much. Yeah, a spliff. What are you, French? Crestfallen, like a child, innocently revealing a truth to an adult that they didn't know why they're in trouble, but they suddenly are in trouble and they have to defend their case. This isn't... I'm American.
No, I'm American.
I reckon it's one of Zace Fron's best deliveries in the movie.
Yeah, it is. It's really, really undersold. It's really naturalistic. I think somebody's like run out of weed before, and he advertises why he's doing this. It's not like it's because there's a scarcity to it for financial or like
he's padding out the weed.
Yeah,
it's for basic
financial
economics
or ability to locate it reasons. In California, I can't imagine it's a problem, but like brilliantly disrespectful.
Yeah. Hey, can I take us into a completely different direction? Is that okay?
Can you bookmark us before you do? I just want to say the other line, the other Wes Bentley line that stuck out to me so hard in today's screening twice was, and I'm sure we've gone over this as well, but this is what you fucking get when you ask us to revisit something we've talked about so many times, is I'm going to go and get an energy drink. Does anybody want anything? It's like, it's exactly the same line of dialogue. It's like, we're just going to write this down now. We'll come back to it and fix it in the morning. And then on the day, and Wes Bentley, to an extent, I guess, is collecting a check where he's like, I'll just read it as it's written. It's just some absolutely bonkers decisions.
That one is even more galling because that one you can tell is in the movie as a placeholder for some product placement. And they were like, okay, are we getting Red Bull or are we getting Monster?
But then,
and so the negotiations are happening, and then they kind of forgot to like put in whoever won.
And we see Red Bull but yeah. we don't hear it.
We do not hear it out
loud. It's a classic movie rule. It's called show, don't tell. And even with advertising, these guys execute.
It's fucked. There's so many crazy lines in this movie. One, so I didn't take any notes, Guy, and I should have, realistically. But I wanted to vibe it with you. I was going to take notes. I had my phone, and then I was like, I would rather vibe it with Guy. But I know that I've forgotten a lot of stuff. But I did write stuff to you in a Facebook thread. But one bit that I know that I wanted to talk about is a theory I've come up with, that there is an alternate way to read this entire film, which is that it is Cole Carter, a.k.a. Zace Fron, a.k.a. the crying DJ himself, is just on a journey constantly being poisoned with PCP by Sophie, Emily Radishkowski, who, by the way, when they started calling her Sophie in this movie, I was like, I have no memory of that being her name. I've seen this movie over 50 times and I have no recollection. Like, if someone asked me, hey, what's Emily Radishkowski's character called in We Are Your Friends, I could not have answered that yesterday. Insane. So, because when he's in the strip club with Wes Bentley playing James Reed from The Feelers.
I like to make money get turned. I like to, that's the song playing in the background, yeah.
They're drinking whiskey. Suddenly, Zace Fron is violently ill.
It's true.
And starts throwing up in a toilet. And then Wes Bentley, who is a far smaller man in stature than Zac Efron's, even when he's not like on Baywatch, he's still just he's a jacked kind of a dude.
Yeah, he is.
And Wes Bentley manages to like throw him over his shoulder in like a judo throw so easily. I'm like, that guy's on PCP again. He's been poisoned. And the other time was when Sophie, Emily Radishkowski, this is like earlier in the film, so I probably should have led with this chronologically, when Zaccoli, he's gone to apologize, right, to James Reed, because he brought his friends were coming around to pick him up. They decided to join the house party that he was DJing at James Reed's house. And Jarhead does what Jarhead's going to do, and that's getting a fucking fight.
He gets in an argument about the various qualities of sushi in different pockets of Los Angeles.
Which, by the way, that argument today was so funny to me. Jarhead just inserts himself into the conversation where two people are flirting at a party. It's like, fuck, did you guys want to know something about sushi? The best sushi is in the valley, which is something that could not possibly be true. It is one of those facts that on its face is just a complete fallacy. Like, there's no logic to that.
I thought that too. There was so much about that scene to enjoy. Like, it was, I really luxuriated in his, the way he inserts himself, because he delivers a few pretty bonkers line reads as well, but it feels consistent with the character, who is this, he's quite an off balance, potentially, he's an unhinged kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he just felt so young to me when he inserts himself into that conversation, like, oh, you poor young boy. Like, you're out of your depth and you're forcing your way in. And then when it doesn't immediately go exactly how you want, which is like inserting yourself in a flirtatious conversation to tell people where you think the best sushi is.
Which is also wrong.
Not true, because you've only eaten sushi in one place. And then not getting the response you want is, there are some nuggets of enjoyment to be gained. I don't think this is necessarily a good scene, but just like...
Yeah.
And that's probably value in the repetitious nature of how we've engaged with the movie. But I'm sorry, I've gotten distracted. Continue with your thought,
no,
please.
No, this is all good context. Just so the PCP theory, that this movie is just a transpiring of events where Cole gets PCP'd by James Reed and Sophie over and over again. So at the start of this party, this is the scene where... the crying DJ explains to Sophie and us, the audience, that if you can hit an audience with any track that's 128 BPM, you physically control what their bodies do, like a Geppetto DJ.
Yeah.
And she, before he makes that speech, which then gets underscored with a lot of like animation and cutaways, like historic footage and stuff to explain his point, he goes, what is that, rosé, to her drink? And she goes, try it. Now, we never see Sophie drink that. We see her hold it. We never see her drink it. Mm. And she makes Cole drink it, and then Cole drinks it. And then she says that it's cranberry juice in soda water to give the appearance of rosé, but with no alcohol content. what she failed to mention, there was fucking PCP in there. Because as soon as he drinks it, he goes on a fucking tirade about how you can control people's physical forms if you chuck on a track that's 128 BPM. And by the way, in the version that I watched today, because I looked absolutely everywhere to pay for this movie, fucking Apple, Google, YouTube, Neon, stuff I subscribe to, Neon, Netflix, Disney Plus, it wasn't available for me to watch in God's own New Zealand Aotearoa for love nor money. So I had to torrent this thing. There, I said it. And for some reason, the entire movie was in English, but every piece of text on screen was in German. So that scene was crazy.
We've come across that before. That is I really like your theory. I like this. And it's not available to everyone. You have to know what to look for. And obviously, it goes without saying that one of the first scenes where Zaccoli, after the spliff is thrown away, is out with James Reed from the Feelers. James Reed poisons him very confidently with PCP. They show up to a party and he's like, "I feel different." And James Reed's like, "Yeah, because I gave him PCP."
That'll be PCP. So, and they have all the animation stuff. So it's like a visual language is established there.
Exactly. Fool me once, shame on you. And then I guess the saying is, but if I give you PCP a second time, you're not getting a heads up. And it's like they're manipulating his reality. The rundown of music, it does have the feeling of, you know, if you've ever done psychedelics and it's like, I know what I can say. And you start talking and then like, you're not quite sure how to present it the way that you normally present information in conversation. So you're just kind of like, well, I can either sort of half-ass this or just follow whatever it is I've opened up and run with it. And that's just a man running full speed ahead with an idea. And it's like, it's crazy. The way he is referencing stuff and like the musical run-through he gives you, because he talks about other genres and their BPMs. You've always had a great... It was nice. There was a nice nostalgia in remembering the moments. I honestly most remember the moments you enjoyed. And I know that you love when he talks about hardcore. There's a guy in the background pumping a stick or a metal pole. Yeah. You've always been a big fan of that. You've always thought the way they throw a house under the bus is really funny.
Yeah.
Well, I was fixated on was like, this guy's talking about musical genres and he's talking about reggae. And he's like, reggae is slow. And they play what is a pretty banging reggae song. But the visual accompaniment is like so far from being in any sort of traditional association with reggae, which is this supports the PCP theory. It's like 12 teenagers from a high school dance squad who are in like sort of athlete, like uncool athleisure wear, doing like a smoke-free stage challenge or like some sort of high school talent quest level dance to reggae. Like I cannot see where they got it from.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to have a visual depiction of reggae because it's so heavily associated with the country of Jamaica. And I'll tell you what, these motherfuckers are not from Jamaica.
Absolutely not, yeah. And then obviously there's your house music, which is just, it is a very, very derisive glance at house music, which is a great genre of music and also so influential in the world of EDM.
What it is it's what happens when you go to like a club that's playing house music at 2 a.m. and everyone's on it and suddenly you turn the lights on and you see everyone. Like that's what we're seeing in that clip, and it's not a good picture. Just human cockroaches scurrying away from the light.
Everyone in the frame has noticed that the lights have been turned on except for one woman at the back of the room who's obviously got her eyes closed and is still very much in the pocket.
It doesn't help that from memory she is a white woman with dreads as well.
You are totally on the money. Probably should have been in the dreadlock montage. I just think like this comes back again to a point I was opening up about the way that they say, do you spin here regularly? Or like they chose, because it is, the movie is a representation or it's a communication about like, it's about youth. It's about growing up. It's about realizing that the value of protecting your lifestyle as a young person like expires at some point when you have to look at the totality of your life and kind of make a decision about the direction you want to go in and whether or not, you know, basically this movie, the journey that these main characters, the core four, the mad lads, the bad boys of the San Fernando Valley are on is one of growth. And it's like, it's that, it's a story as old as time. It's coming of age. It's transition from young adulthood to like personal responsibility and total adulthood.
Well, except for Squirrel.
Except for Squirrel, who dies.
It was fucking harrowing watching him die twice in a day. Tell you that.
It's really important he dies, because what they've got, he dies like an hour into the movie. It's like they've made a movie for an hour. They run out of steam on that story. So they go over, they pick something else up. squirrel, they kill him, and then they're like, okay, how does this affect the movie we were making? And then they come back to the movie and finish doing it. But the thing I'm saying is, like, the story, it's about personal growth, or, like, you know, it's about young adulthood and that stuff. And then the lens, or the focal point of the movie, the prism through which they're looking at it, is electronic dance music and DJing. But they haven't spent enough time in the world to do it in a convincing way at all. Like, all of the details of the way a song is made, all of the details of the music festival, the way that the professional DJs talk about their work to each other, are just like, it's not remotely rooted or immersive.
Okay, this is interesting. Let me offer like hypothetical pushback on this.
Please. Sort
of hypothetical devil's advocate. Because, you know, in Friends, right? Like, it's a I think very fine, but common observation that no one's doing any work in that show. No one's going to... Chandler occasionally references his work, but, like, no one's doing... Oh, I guess Rachel waitresses sometimes when they're in the coffee shop, but...
Is it very much in the background?
99% of the time, these adults are not doing any work in the show. Yeah. It's like, when are they working? It's like, well, would that be a better show if we saw them working? Would it be a better movie if we spent time in the intricacies of creating an electronic track?
Here's the answer, Tim.
Do I want to see a guy operating on Fruity Loops on a Mac?
The answer to that is no. Like, what the movie lacks is not more time spent, you know, creating an accurate representation of this stuff. But it's like, the other parts of it, the parts about the growth and the friendships and the romantic entanglement and stuff, like, the difference with Friends is that you don't notice that. And the difference with this is, like, this is the coating in which they're carrying the story.
Yeah,
and
true.
It is, it's distractingly, not
threadbare?
Inaccurate, but, like, thin. Yeah, threadbare. Mm. Like, I just cannot get over it. The whole movie is built into this final song that he... And, look, I've written jokes in a day. I get it. Some of the best jokes I've written have happened in a day. But, like, he throws together from phone recordings. And he shows up to this gig. There's, like... You've got one job, to represent a music festival accurately, and they do a pretty good job of it in Las Vegas. But when he shows up, no music is playing. Everyone is in the car park looking at the stage. Like, it's not like they're even restlessly talking to each other or getting annoyed that the music festival has been badly programmed. I can't see anywhere to buy food or drinks. I don't know where the portaloos are. You've got 5,000 people standing silently facing a stage, and he walks out there. He's got a plug in his own laptop. He's got a plug in his own charger. He's got two in front of everyone who are waiting for music to be played, set up the entire kit. And it's funny, we've talked about it before, but it's just
But this is, it's so hard to get over it, because I feel like I know what they were trying to do, which is manufacture a moment of tension where time slows down and everyone's not quite sure what's going to happen next. You can fucking do that, like, more eloquently in the context of a music festival, which isn't Zace Fron carrying his fucking laptop with him, making his way to a stage that is dead silent in front of everyone's there. Everyone's been having a good time through the afternoon, and you're telling me that when the last act stops, they just cut off all sound on the PA?
And the audience of the movie technically are meant to be the audience of people who would go to these. And so for them to see that would be so, like, jarring and pull you out of the world that they've tried so hard to build, because it's like, this is not even approximate to what we do or what our lifestyle is. It's like, it's not an especially entertaining observation, but it's like, it's part of the imbalance of this movie where I was like,
hey, there were guess times what, fuckos? Sometimes if you make us watch We Are Your Friends twice, we're not going to be the funniest dudes in the world.
Yeah,
we're just going to reflect to you our honest experience.
Yeah. It's just, I really, this time, I think because life marches on and we're doing our things and we're in different stages, I really appreciated the effort to make a meditation on this part of life for these types of people. Even though they're your number four fuck boys, I still, like, I enjoy the attempt to distill what it is to transition from early adulthood to being a full-blown adult. And so I think the parts that they got wrong, especially the second time I had to fucking sit through it again, I was like, you were not miles away. Perhaps this is not Maximum Joseph's magnum opus. Perhaps his magnum opus is around the corner.
Yeah, you could be right on that.
Because, like you said, visually, it's a good-looking movie. All those PCP scenes where it's like they introduce external animation, those are like, Adam McKay, I know he would have done it first, but, like, they're from exactly the same school of movie making. It's like, here's a distilled explanation of it. And Adam McKay does it. He doesn't qualify it the way that Maximum Joseph does, which is that one of his main characters is secretly tripping out on PCP the whole time.
Yeah. That's a really good point. So the equivalent in this movie of Margot Robbie explaining, what does she explain, like fractional banking or something?
So, yeah.
Is Zais Fron taking a sip of PCP and being like, right, here's what the different genres are. Here's how they relate to human biology. Which is, when you say that out loud, such a cool speech to give at an afternoon party while you're behind the decks. Be like, right, actually, I have comprised in my head over the months I've been DJing a very strong and complicated theory of how different musical genres relate to the human anatomy and how to manipulate humans using sonic forces, specifically beats per minute. Let me tell you about it. The fucking thing that got me about that sequence this time around was how much it does reflect a Google image search, because there's like, he says the words, fuck, this always has stuck out to me. And it will never not. If you guys make me watch it again, I'm going to bring this up again because I'll notice it again.
Good on you, says, brother.
There is a popular myth that 128 beats per minute, I can't remember the verb, like synergizes with the human heart. And if you can lock that in, then you've got them under your control. And first of all, he says popular myth, which means it's not fucking true. It's a piece of information people are circulating, but it's not true. But then bounces through the speech with that as a foundational understanding of something. Yeah. It's like, you've just told me there is a well-known lie about this thing. Then you're like, so therefore, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, hold on. You told me it was a lie. But when he says the word myth, there's just a fucking flash of Zeus there. And it's literally like someone's going, okay, fuck, myth. What's a myth? Myth. Okay, Greek mythology. Zeus. Okay, cool. Put that in the movie. So like every word that he says, they've punched into Google image search and just smashed that into a montage.
It's first crack. It's first crack of everything. There's a few other things I want to discuss with you, Tim, because there's some other stuff that stuck out. And watching it again, it was that same nostalgia. It was like, Tim will be enjoying this. Because, you know, we watched it apart. We're in different countries even, which is new for the podcast.
We're separated by the great Tasman Sea.
But the cake scene, you've always had a special place in your heart for the cake scene. How'd you
These
find it?
These are all
it?
Things I thought it? We both enjoyed a lot. Is this just stuff that I got off on?
I think I like it. I mean, I like it too. But yeah, I think you are. I think you like you love this stuff, to my memory anyway.
Yeah, you're not wrong, man. I loved it. I loved it both times today, the cake scene. What's crazy about this scene, guy, is the following. Zac Efron has been stationed at their house in their kitchen. He apparently has a key, so he just goes over there. He's making a track. Sophie and James Reed from The Feelers come home from a dinner. James Reed is shit-faced and is going off about how the entire hospitality industry of Los Angeles is staffed by aspiring actors who couldn't give a rat's about doing their current job, which is waiting on him. And it's like they present a sequence of events in this kind of mini argument that's going on. Like he has forgotten that it's his birthday today.
Yeah.
Because he opens the fridge and there's a birthday cake that Sophie put in there. And he's like, oh, it's my birthday.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds.
Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Like, did you fucking forget? Because presumably that's why you went out in the first place. You went out to dinner because it's your birthday today.
Zayfron doesn't know it's his birthday, and you'd assume he'd be in the loop.
Now, his line read on Happy Birthday, Dude, one of the top five in the movie. And there's some greats.
But yeah, I just, while we are giving credit to line reads, there's one that I would be remiss not to mention, which is whatever knockoff Johnny Depp. On the way to the music festival in Las Vegas, and he's talking about all the drugs he's got, and he lists all the drugs, and then he just looks out the window and he's like, I fucking love music festivals.
And let me ask you about Johnny Depp, dime store Johnny Depp, in this movie. I don't think we've ever talked about him too much. What's your read on him?
He's not given heaps, man. He's no. In the movie, technically an aspiring actor, has a connection to this page, Dick Floyd Diamond's Mouthful of Concrete real estate grifter, and that's his in. And I feel like we get a glimpse of his dad when he goes to the club on the first opening montage. He says, see you, pops, or something. He says, see you later. And there's like an older man in an apartment. And so you get the sense maybe his morality lies in looking after a parent. But other than that, he appears to just be like...
He's a full-blown drug dealer as well. He's the only one of the four that you would describe as like a full-on proper drug dealer.
The assumption I have about him is that he's probably... has had or has a hard life and is looking for an out. Like after Squirrel's funeral, when they're all taking pot shots at each other and he's saying, Paige has said, you know, sorry that your friend died. And everyone's like, Paige kind of sucks. And he's like, well, Paige sucks, but like, I'm not going to make it as an actor. I don't want to be a drug dealer. This is the only thing I have. It's boring. It's like, that's his... That is all he has.
It's sad though, man. I've had friends who have kind of gone down that path. It's a sad thing to watch.
That's where some of the resonance I was feeling today is, which is like, look, you know, this is a really challenging moment in a young person's life between like, you know, your dreams become extinguished and you can hold out for longer and hope for the best. Like, to make it in anything, really, especially outside of traditional job structures, you need a huge amount of resilience and luck. And if you don't, if you're short on either of them, it's going to be a hard time. And that's, I think, the path that he's charting. I'm wary of time, and I know that we didn't get too in-depth into him, but there's one big question I had that I couldn't figure out during this movie that I want you to help me with.
We haven't been talking that long. This is our podcast. We get to determine the duration.
I know. But I, again, you know, there's certain things I want to bring up, and I'd be frustrated to not take the opportunity. But so there's a scene in Las Vegas where it looks like Sophie and Zayfron are about to have sex, but we never find out if they do. It's like they build right up to the moment, and then it's really hard to tell.
I recently saw the clip of, what's his name?
Paul Rudd.
Yes. Going on Conan's podcast, pulling this kind of shit.
What kind of shit?
I feel like that is some sort of inspiration for you reopening the Spain.
What you're talking about. Because later on, again, we see the conflict between James Reed from The Feelers and Zayfron, and he says... He asks him point blank. He says, "Did you fuck her?" And
I can't tell you how internally torn I am on whether or not to engage in this.
Well, he doesn't say anything.
I don't think I've been more conflicted this year.
He doesn't admit or deny it. So there's no actual way of knowing what the relationship is within the movie.
Guy, I'm furious, and I'm holding it all inside. I'm so angry you've brought this up.
You don't want to let it out? No, I mean, if you've got information I don't, if you could set the record straight, it would make a big difference to me, because I kind of left watching it twice a little bit confused.
I feel like this is not a line that I've used often, and I don't think I will use often, and I would not like to be one of those people who sort of leans on this as a crutch. But as a father, I feel like I have gained a renewed ability to be able to kind of insulate myself from a situation of losing my head and just kind of separate myself emotionally so I don't get too frustrated with a scenario and react in a way that would be bad for the situation or people around me. And so what I'm going to choose to do is bottle this up and suppress it.
Sounds pretty healthy. So you agree so that it's not clear.
I absolutely do not agree with you.
Oh,
I cannot make that more clear.
What do you think happens?
I think some filmmaking has happened, Guy. Well, and I think to retain its M rating, they did not have to show us Zac Efron's penis entering Emily Ratajkowski's vagina on screen for us to know what has happened in the story.
It's one of those, it's like a nice little mystery they left in there for us.
It absolutely isn't. It's the opposite of a mystery.
Yeah.
They explain everything that's happened. It's right there for anyone to see.
Another example of the movie coming so close to, you know, to achieving something or telling us something and then sort of not being able to quite finish it off.
Couldn't disagree more. I'm so angry. I can't think about anything else. Sequel for this movie?
Is there what?
Could you see a sequel for this film? We Were Your Friends? Or We'll Be Your Friends? We Are Some More of Your Friends?
None of them really justify more time in their company. Like, it's,
you know what I would want to see? I wouldn't want to see it, but if this movie was a box office hit, a prequel... like showing them 2 years before the events of this, because they're already kind of muckrakers, like bottom feeders when the movie begins, but to see an even, like maybe them in their senior year of high school.
Because
this is probably the underlying thing. I forgot to bring this up. I was messaging you about this. This infuriated me and I'd forgotten about this. Why do they keep bringing up Cole's parents and then not tell us what happened? The mother and the father are alluded to in separate occasions in these mysterious forlorn terms, and we never get resolution on it.
You don't need to tell me twice. This is the parenting equivalent in the movie of whether or not Zace Fron and Sophie had sex. It's like they come right to the edge. Once he says, my mum taught piano, does she still teach?
James Reed, yes, is the Does she still teach?
Yeah. And then he references his dad's name, Richard. Like, it's just,
Only that though, because I'm going to just blow past what you're trying to do. Tanya Romero, whose house is being foreclosed on, and the dastardly page is about to buy it from under her for $20,000, despite the fact that it's worth $350,000, maybe, according to Paige, $400,000. Where was I going with that?
You're talking about him saying Richard.
Yes. Here's the kid in the background, and he says, oh, I think he says Richard was my father's name as well, right? What did he say?
It's Richard's. He doesn't use past tense, I think.
That's funny. Richard was my dad's name.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, no, clearly we're coming back to this.
I just have to insert myself. He doesn't Chekhov's say was.
Orphan.
Because if he said was, at least we get some understanding about the character. His dad's dead. He said Richard is my dad's name. Which
true.
Okay, both your parents are alive. Something's obviously happened. You live with Jarhead.
Yeah.
You talk about your parents.
You don't know what your mum's currently doing for a job. Like, which, just fucking resolve it, movie. Tell us.
Yeah. Don't be such a fucking tease.
Don't be so coy.
Such a teasy movie. Tim, did you have something that was akin to a shining light in this double feature?
Yeah, I texted it to you. What was it? Soundproof the walls. I didn't even look it up. It came to me in a flash.
Another iconic line read.
Jarhead bringing the boys into an apartment that he secretly has already rented, already gotten the keys for, already signed the paperwork, and they don't know yet. And he's taking them through, giving them the good real estate sell on all the fantastic features of this new humble abode for our Fantastic Four. And just slaps the walls like a used car salesman on a 1985 Toyota Corolla. And just says, soundproof the walls. And it's such a great line read. I fucking love it.
It's outstanding. Mine is it's might be unbecoming of a gentleman for this to be mine, but the second time I was watching the PCP explanation of the function of music, there's like all these overlays. People are starting to dance, and there's this guy who's wearing sunglasses and a fedora and like a sink, like some sort of Venice Beach,
like a muscle
singlet
top?
Dispenser. Yeah, which got like a, it's like got, you know, the sky and water printed on it, and it says like probably Miami or something. And you see sort of like his heart beating when Cole's talking about his heart. You see like a slight overlay or inlay, I guess, of like his heart and how it links up to everything. And then it's like, oh, that's nice they did that. And then again, like, that's not the only time they do that to open the door to then exploiting a huge part of, I imagine, why they wanted Emily Ratajkowski to play Sophie, because later on they talk about the heart again, and this time it's her heart, and they just find like an opportunity to put a cat. Like, it's just, it's such transparent, outstanding Maximum Joseph movie making, where he's like, and now, with everyone's permission and because of this chest. Brilliant device I've set up, I'm going to put a camera right on her norks while she's dancing. And I just thought, I could see the methodology. I could see the whole moment. And I thought, Maximum Joseph, you dirty dog, you've done it again. This is the second time today.
Emily Ratajkowski's chest was your shining light of the entire film. Who's really at fault here?
Well, I still think Maximum Joseph for not resolving that sex question.
You would say that, wouldn't you?
I would.
That, I believe, will bring us to the close of this revisiting, thanks to you, our financial backers. It's some sort of penance for being naughty boys who have been a little bit slovenly, a little bit, what do they say in America? Tardy.
Yeah, with they say tardy.
With our supporter Deciders Club watchers, and rightly so. And you want to know what? It was a massive pain in the ass. Fucking hated watching the movie twice today, but I applaud the decision. Yeah. I welcome the punishment. This is what the worst idea of all time is all about. This is the DNA of the show we have made.
On a different day, at a different period in my life or year, I even guess, or month, I probably would have been able to laugh alongside you at the decision you made for us. And the fact I couldn't is actually a testament to the power of the decision.
And you're in a different boat. Yeah. You are within striking distance of having done this solo with Sex and the City 2. So I feel like we are in slightly different situations.
I mean, all that to say, like, I sort of, the worst part of me admires the ruthless edge shown by doling out this punishment to us. I hope you've enjoyed our analysis. I hope against hope that the next time you make a decision for us, you will do it with some mercy and kindness in your heart. And I thank you, and I thank you, Tim. I thank Maximum Joseph. I thank all of the stars of the movie. And I'd also like to say thank you to anyone who's in Melbourne who's come to my show. I've had a lot of Worst Idea fans come through, and some of them have been generous enough to share some very thoughtful, customized gifts. And I just want to say, you know, every time someone from the podcast comes up and says, you know, I like the podcast, it really means a lot. So thank you for coming to the show. Thank you for subscribing. Fuck you for doing this to us. I hope you're enjoying your time on Substack, because I am not.
It's the DJ's job to get the crowd out of their heads and into their bodies. I like to start them off at about 125 beats per minute. Once you've locked onto their heart rate, you start bringing them up song by song.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.